This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the International Committee of the Red Cross warns a 3 to 4 month window remains to avert a famine that could potentially kill millions of people in three African countries and Yemen.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from ICRC headquarters in Geneva. Details coming up.
Also, a $22 million emergency loan has been approved by the UN to help prevent another famine in Somalia. And opposition parties in Zimbabwe say they want the United Nations to be involved in next year's presidential election.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN has approved a $22 million emergency loan to help prevent another famine in Somalia. The loan comes from the UN's Central Emergency Response Fund. It will be used for programs operated by the Food and Agriculture Organization in rural areas that have been especially hard hit by drought. UN Humanitarian Affairs Chief Stephen O'Brien says the loan will bridge a crucial gap and allow the FAO to immediately save lives and livelihoods. The drought has destroyed crops, dried up wells, and killed livestock. Somalia declared a national disaster last month. More than 6 million people in the country face acute food insecurity. Somalia has experienced famine twice in the last 25 years. Besides Somalia, Yemen and parts of northern Nigeria risk famine. In South Sudan, famine has already been declared in parts of Unity State. The African Union, meanwhile, has announced it's donating $100,000 to fight food insecurity in the Horn of Africa. It's called on member countries to also make donations.
The International Committee of the Red Cross warns a 3 to 4 month window remains to avert a famine that could potentially kill millions of people in three African countries and Yemen. Lisa Schlein reports from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says speed is of the essence to prevent a tragedy of massive proportions in Somalia, South Sudan, Northeast Nigeria, and Yemen. ICRC Director of Operations Dominique Steelhart says aid agencies must urgently scale up their humanitarian operations and international donors must support these efforts to prevent millions of people in these countries from starving to death.
This is not business as usual. 20 million people facing starvation is not something that we are dealing with every day. And therefore, we really need to act now. And if we act now, especially in Yemen and in Somalia, famine can be averted.
Steelhart says famine in all four countries is first and foremost the result of protracted conflicts. But he notes Somalia and Yemen also are affected by drought, which makes it easier to tackle famine there. Steelhart says it is more difficult to deal with the crisis in South Sudan and Northeast Nigeria, where famine is a man-made disaster caused purely by conflict. He tells VOA time is running out and that aid agencies must act now to get a massive humanitarian response underway to tackle this hunger crisis.
I would say we have probably a window of 3 months during which large amounts of aid need to be distributed in order to avoid a worst-case scenario. It is really absolutely necessary that there is a strong mobilization of the donor community.
The International Committee of the Red Cross is appealing for $400 million to provide emergency aid to 5 million of the most vulnerable people in the famine-affected countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Central Kenya has been hard hit by drought, political maneuvering, and land use issues. This as northern pastoralists have brought an influx of livestock to the area looking for pasture and water. But they've also brought guns, resulting in violence and a recent government directive to dispatch the military. From Laikipia, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Vultures and hyenas seem to be the only ones benefiting from Kenya's drought, as dead elephants, buffaloes, zebras, giraffes, cattle, sheep, and goats dot the landscape of Laikipia, one of the country's most popular tourist destinations. Some of the animals are dying from drought conditions, while some wildlife have been shot or speared to death by armed herders in search of pasture and water for their tens of thousands of cattle, sheep, and goats. Ranch and conservancy owners say these herders are invading their private property, breaking fences, stealing cattle, using grass and water meant for their livestock and their neighbors, cutting down olive trees for the leaves, even killing a ranch owner in March when he went out to check on burned houses. About 35 people have died as a result of the unrest. Martin Evans is the chairman of the Laikipia Farmers Association and the owner of Old Mysore Farm.
This is not the first dry season we've had. When this thing happened, it wasn't a matter of drought. It was a normal rainy season when they came in. This is a politically instigated invasion. As far as we can see, they're using the cattle as a tool, as a battering ram, to just take over private property.
As Kenya's August general elections approach, many believe politicians are drumming up constituent support by encouraging these armed herders to take what they want.
We are very much worried because I can see this issue is political. This is not illegal grazing. This is abnormal illegal grazing. I know even for us to vote in this here general election is hard for us to vote because they want to scare us so that these illegal people with illegal arms to take over Laikipia North constituency seat.
The herders, however, argue that they are just doing the best they can to survive, given difficult circumstances. He says, I know that I'm not doing the right thing, being on somebody else's ranch, and I'm not happy the way that people see me negatively. But right now, it's my only option because my cows are dying. Overgrazing and a lack of long-term planning have been blamed for why the northern rangelands are no longer productive. And Josh Parrott, general manager at Mugi Ranch, says there are now too many livestock for what the land can accommodate.
It's a very complicated situation because it is pastoralists. I mean, it is their livelihood, but how one controls it and puts stocking rates in place, but it should be looked at seriously because it is a massive problem because of it. There's no controls.
Kenya's government announced it will send defense forces to Laikipia and other areas to remove illegal firearms and restore order. People here are urging the soldiers to use restraint, since they say they will be the ones left to deal with the aftermath.
So they should actually come to the ground and actually appoint some leaders actually from the ground, locals from the ground, to work with the KDF so that the local will determine the person who is being hunted and who is not being hunted.
Although a long-term solution is key, for now, people are just hoping that the rains will come soon. Jill Craig, VOA News, Laikipia, Kenya.
UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, says by the year 2040, about 600 million children will be living in areas with extremely limited water supplies. It has released a new report on World Water Day called Thirsting for a Future, Water and Children in a Changing Climate. It examines threats to children's lives and well-being caused by a lack of water and the effects of climate change. Nicholas Rees is a UNICEF policy specialist working on climate and economic analysis and one of the authors of the new report. From the Mongolian capital, Ulaanbaatar, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kepua about the report's main findings.
Basically, we're going to see about 1 in 4 children living in areas of extremely high water stress by the year 2040.
What do you mean by water stress?
It's a technical term, and it refers to the ratio of water demand to water supply. But it basically means that areas where there will be a significantly low levels of water supply for people to use in water and sanitation. Essentially, it's water that children and families use to live. These are areas that are particularly prone. We're definitely very concerned about them. A lot of the cause of water stress has to do with a combination of growing demand for water, but also climate change. what we're going to see is that climate change will affect the availability of water, and it will affect the functioning of water and sanitation systems that children and families rely on.
What are the main ways climate change will affect access to water?
When temperatures increase, actually the water storage capacity of the atmosphere changes. The atmosphere is actually able to hold a greater amount of water as temperatures increase. And then when temperatures cool, precipitation can become more intense. Furthermore, we're likely to see an increasing number and severity of droughts. And for children, this matters incredibly because they're more vulnerable to dehydration. They're more fragile to the effects of climate change. We're also likely to see an increasing number of floods and severe weather. That could actually cause a complete disruption of water and sanitation services. It can cause contamination of water supply services.
That means more disease?
Potentially. Obviously, it depends on a lot of the kind of policies and actions that we do to prevent that from happening. But stagnant water is a breeding ground for mosquitoes, and mosquitoes transmit malaria. But children under the age of 5 bear the greatest burden of disease associated with malaria. So stagnant water from after a flood or after severe weather could potentially be a major risk factor for vector-borne diseases.
So what can be done?
We have to help communities diversify their water sources. I think that could go a long way to making sure that they're more resilient to any kind of sudden change in whether it could be an increased dry spell or a sudden flood. The diversification of water sources at the community level is very important. Another thing that I think is also very important is making sure that we have access to water and sanitation services now. I think that even goes to behavior change. The practices of open defecation combined with a flood could be potentially disastrous. I think at a subnational and national level as well, there's a lot that can be done in terms of better planning and risk management, protection of river basins, water management policies so that water isn't wasted. Water isn't something that stays within one national boundary or even subnational boundaries. And so cooperation on water management across subnational and national boundaries will be important.
Nicholas Rees is a UNICEF policy specialist working on climate and economic analysis from the Mongolian capital, Ulaanbaatar. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
Meanwhile, UN agencies also say the key to solving global water shortages is to recycle wastewater. Wastewater includes runoff from agriculture, industry, and urban areas, especially in developing countries. A new report says nearly all of the world's wastewater goes untreated. AFP quotes UNESCO Director General Irina Bokova as saying neglecting the opportunities arising from improved wastewater management is nothing less than unthinkable. Two-thirds of the world's population live in areas that experience water scarcity at least 1 month each year. Half live in India and China. The UN Environment Program says the demand for water will increase by 50% by 2030. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A $22 million emergency loan has been approved by the UN to help prevent another famine in Somalia. And according to the Red Cross, a 3 to 4 month window remains to avert a famine that could potentially kill millions of people in three African countries and Yemen. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Research is being discussed today by scientists in a virtual symposium on the importance of trees and forest on water cycles and food security. The two-day meeting is being hosted by the Indonesia-based CGIAR Research Program on Forest, Trees, and Agroforestry. It coincides with World Water Day and the increased attention being given to the drought in the East and Horn of Africa. The new findings point to the important effects trees have on helping to retain water on the ground. They produce cooling moisture, which in turn has a positive impact on food security and climate change adaptation. Professor Mena Van Noordwijk is a CGIAR scientist and one of the authors of the research. He spoke with me about the importance of trees to food security and what it means for drought-stricken areas in the East and Horn of Africa.
The role of trees, forests towards water is very clear in the minds of many people. But in the current discussion about climate adaptation, the links to water are actually not fully represented. And we have this sense that the climate convention talks about mitigation, carbon, greenhouse gases, and indirect effects through global warming on local climate, whereas trees and forests deal directly with local climate and influence the vulnerability of people and what crops, animals, and people experience as temperature is very much influenced by how many trees there are in that neighborhood. Yeah, so it's a bit the trees, forests have been forgotten within the climate discussion. When we talk about adaptation, actually by manipulating tree cover and keeping forests in the right place and having to change humidity, temperature, and many of the things that matter in terms of climate adaptation. So there's a huge agenda on modifying climate at the scale that it matters through forests and trees that is actually not currently found in the discussion on adaptation, we think.
There's some new research that has caused scientists to take a deeper look at the roles of trees and forests regarding food security. What is some of the new research?
This stuff that has been accumulating over the last 10 years, you can say. I think towards rainfall, there are two important things. You need moisture in the atmosphere before you have rainfall, and we better understand now where that moisture comes from and how far it may have traveled and whether it derives from the oceans or whether it is dependent on recycling of rainfall over. The second part, and that was largely independent of that so far, is the understanding of the biological agency in cloud formation. Bacteria that live on plants and that become little ice droplets and help to make rain. And because of that, with vegetation, you have lower level clouds can actually generate rainfall. Without vegetation, you need big thunderstorms and a lot of turbulence and a lot of stuff on that front. So that, I would say, is a very recent synthesis of things that have built up partly in physics, partly in biology, that are now coming together in new ways.
There's a drought that is going on right now in the Horn of Africa and in East Africa. What can be done at this time to really help with that situation? And looking forward into the future, what can be done to help mitigate the damages and the food insecurity caused by drought?
Of course, the first thing to say is that area always has had very low rainfall, and wetter years, dry years is part of the normal story. From some work that we have on the tree rings in Ethiopia, we do have the sense, however, that at the moment these things come back more frequently than before. We can say, well, is this a new phenomenon or is this actually part of what we have been used to? Also, for the story within Kenya, it is clear that in these areas with variable rainfall, the wise thing to do is to move around and to make use of where it is good. And at the moment, we have fixed barriers and fixed plots of land and lots of conflicts between people and their rights as soon as it is a drier part. At one level, it is more understanding of how the ecological variability, whether people are still flexible to move around or not. There's no way to make rain by any miracle event. In the longer term, maintaining a good atmospheric recycling can certainly help, at least for the Kenyan part. So we get better understanding now where this rainfall actually comes from and what these teleconnections are. Rainfall in Horn of Africa links back partly with the ocean and the temperature of the ocean and partly with neighboring land masses. But then you talk about a 5 to 10 year frame of maintaining high vegetation. We do get evidence that vegetation helps to generate rainfall in adjacent areas. That's the type of understanding that would lead to a 5-10 year time frame of managing the environment a little wiser than we do now. Of course, the people currently suffering from drought and hunger are not helped by that. Hopefully it can help to have a better understanding of those scales at which these things can be influenced.
Professor Mena Van Noordwijk is a CGIAR scientist. He spoke with me from Bogor, Indonesia.
Opposition parties in Zimbabwe say they want the United Nations to be involved in next year's presidential election. The opposition wants the UN to assist in the procurement of biometric voter registration kits, which can use fingerprints, eye scans, or voice recognition to confirm the identity of a voter. The call follows a meeting yesterday between the parties and the chairman of Zimbabwe's Election Commission, Rita Makaru. The Associated Press says Makaru walked out of the meeting and accused opposition parties of unfairly criticizing her. They've demanded her resignation, saying she's helping President Robert Mugabe win yet another term in office. Mugabe, who's 93, has been in power since 1980. Following a rally today, the opposition presented a petition to the Election Commission asking for UN involvement.
The head of the International Organization for Migration is visiting Libya today. He's meeting with officials about the flow of migrants to Europe and displacement within the country. William Lacey Swing says Libya once had a booming economy that attracted many migrant workers. Now he says it's a nation beset by a grave security situation and a collapsing economy. Nearly all of the 20,000 migrants and refugees that have crossed the Mediterranean to Europe this year left from Libyan shores. More than 500 have died trying to make the crossing. The IOM says the migration crisis is made worse by political insecurity and conflict in Libya. It's estimated there are more than 300,000 displaced people in the country. Ambassador Swing is meeting with the chairman of the Presidential Council of the Government of National Accord, Fayez al-Sarraj, the interior minister of the GNA.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm your host, Shaka Sally. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Africa land reform. The World Bank says that Africa needs to change its systems for buying and selling land. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
and AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.